Welcome to the Deep Dive Live. I'm Paul Wadlington. That's Ian Boyd. And we are here today to serve you. As always, specifically, we're going to serve your questions, your queries, your interrogatives. Hey, before we do that, we want you guys to make sure that you're subscribed to this channel. Make sure you like and subscribe. Pound the like button. That's what you're supposed to say if you're a minor YouTube influencer like me and Ian. You're supposed to pound the like button. You want to use an action verb, Ian. That makes people do it. And Roaster, good to see you, buddy. Hook'em Horns, thank you for joining us. And, of course, the best place for your knowledge of college sports, of Texas sports, is InsideTexas.com. It is non-parallel, and it's knowledge, information, and fun. We have a good time there as well. And a Texas flag always raises my heart. Have you seen many state flags, Ian?
Yeah, but I can recognize very few of them.
Did you know that the Texas state flag is almost identical to the Peruvian flag?
Yeah.
All right. Good
band. Yeah, because the new Pope is like half Peruvian and you saw the flag and now it's in your mind.
That's right. Yeah. Colorado actually has a pretty good state flag. Wyoming, good state flag. California, as wussified and weird as that place has become, excellent state flag.
The bear.
Yeah. Golden bear. Rendered extinct, unfortunately. But what's not extinct and what's topical are your questions. It's Chile, not Peru. Texas Homer, crack production right there. It's Chile. Very good. Not Peru at all. I should have known that. I've been to Peru.
The Pope all is right. Peru, though.
That's right. Well, sure. We're not going to be Chile today. We're going to warm it up with your questions. All right. Let's talk about it. Question number one. Has the portal made top teams more stacked or hurt depth via losses? Or does it just depend on how well teams use it? Ian, your thoughts?
It's that one. I think it's, you see there are schools like Georgia. Georgia wants to stack young talent out of high school. And they have found in the portal era, it's exceptionally hard to hold on to young guys who don't want to wait to play. And so they have been hurt. Other schools following that model have been hurt by the transfer portal. You just can't stack young talent the same way.
I would say most schools have been hurt.
But
the Ohio States of the world, part of the reason they won the national title last year was their depth, which they acquired largely through the portal.
If you're willing to take guys that like if Georgia would go get more guys, except they'd only do this at receiver, which is the only bad part of Kirby Smart's program. If you would take guys where it's like, this guy maybe isn't going to be Georgia's model at this position, but he's a senior, he's played football, and if we have to put him in there, he'll do the right things. If you use the transfer portal to get guys like that, you can build quality depth. But if you insist on trying to have future NFL players 1, 2, and 3 at every position on your depth chart, the transfer portal is going to wreck you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd say broadly, it's hurt most teams because there's a pretty clear hierarchy in college football, who robs from who. And the Texases, the Ohio States, the Georgias are in a pretty good position to use the portal to actually build more depth. But you will find for some of the premier programs, individual positions that get raided if they're not able to sell those younger players on the dream down the road. But so far, the Ohio States of the world have done a good job of that. So
you can go get a guy that's like, I want to get as big of an NIL payday as I can get for the last year that I'm going to play college football before I have to do something else in life.
Yep.
And I can get a big NIL payout. And maybe I can get a ring and be part of a champion. And if I'm only a backup or a role player, that's fine. Because I'm just trying to squeeze the remaining value I can out of college football. You can't do that at not a top school.
That's exactly right. So the answer to the question is, depends how well you use it. There's really only a handful of teams that can actually build depth using the portal. Most teams are going to get robbed. But what we are seeing is that people are getting much better at defending against marauders in the portal They're doing a good job of retention. And I thought, you know, there's some teams that notably stepped up in that regard in this offseason, particularly Arizona State. They did a pretty good job keeping Leavitt and keeping Jordan Tyson around. Next question. Now that Sark, speaking of the portal, now that Sark has more of his own recruits in-house, do you feel he's not going to the portal enough? Perhaps because he has more faith in his guys he recruited. So I'll start off with this. I actually think that Sark is quite willing to go to the portal, as evidenced in our defensive tackle room. We basically created one through the portal. But there are less quality players available in the portal this year. There were just less difference makers available in the portal than the prior 2 years.
Yeah, I think Sark has positions that he knows needs to be at a certain level, and he doesn't care how they get there. So I don't really see him holding back. I'm with you. I'm not totally sure why the person asking this feels like Texas is held back in the portal when they added, what, two starting specialists, probably both starting defensive tackles, potential future starting linebacker.
Starting tight end,
starting wide receiver, potentially a starting offensive lineman before it's all over. And potentially at some point in the season, hopefully not, your starting quarterback.
So. Yeah, I think we had fewer sort of big portal names or bang sort of additions because they weren't available. They're just not as many good players available this year in the portal as there have been in the prior two. So I think that's the reality of it. Why go portal if it's not going to be an upgrade, says Jeff G in the chat. And I think that's exactly right. You don't just go in the portal to go into the portal. You want to ultimately still develop the guys on your own campus. And if you don't see a clear upgrade or a clear hole getting filled, what's the purpose? So that's the answer to that question. Next. If the starting interior is Nato, Hudson, Campbell, left to right, who's the swing guy? Robertson for guard center? Ian, what do you think?
I think there's two or three possibilities here. One is that it's Robertson and you move Hudson around as needed. Another is that it's one of the younger guards. Kind of doubted on that. They could get this player from the portal in the next week or so before that opportunity is closed. And then the other one that I feel like has been barely hinted at, but just watch out for, is Brandon Baker. If they either got a right tackle in the portal that they liked, or they felt, you know, Coach O can get the job done, we need Baker's pass protection inside, I could see Baker moving in there. I don't think Kojo would.
You know who I think the swing guy is? The starting center.
Hudson.
Yeah, I think Cole Hudson's the swing guy. I think if they have an injury at guard, I think Cole Hudson's going to go to guard, and I think Connor Robertson will probably be our center.
So Robertson's the sixth man.
Well, he's not in the sense that we don't want him to play guard. So the true swing guy is Hudson, who's actually the starting center. Meaning he can play center or either guard position. Does that make sense?
Who do you think would be the third tackle? Just Kojo, Baker, Leaser?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I would say also on the interior, big fall camp potential, big offseason until fall camp, Nate Kibble. Keep your eye on that guy. I think he's got a lot of traits that translate well to guard play. So those are my two cents. Next question. Great question by Justin Wales and great anticipation by our producer here. Is the lack of great portal players solely due to teams improving retention? I'd say largely due to teams improving retention. You know the other factor? No major jobs opened up in college football. Mm. The biggest jobs that opened up, which it allows the biggest portal exodus, Purdue and Stanford. And they got thoroughly raided because I scouted both teams when I learned of both of those coaches' firings and immediately was like, okay, here are the 5-6 guys that can play and are going to be gone after heavily. And those are the 5 or 6 guys that can play and we're gone after heavily. And they were all snatched up, and both of those teams are going to be limping into the season. But we didn't have a USC, LSU, you know, we didn't have a big-time program get a new coach. And that's what really creates a lot of the portal activity.
There's also teams are building out their, like, front office staffing, nailing down which collective is in charge and collects all the money.
Yep.
All those things are getting ironed out, which helps. And then also the house revenue sharing thing has been such a unknown. It keeps swinging back and forth whether that's a big deal. Like, am I going to have $20 million from revenue sharing or 15 or whatever it is to spend on my roster or not? That's probably impacted some of this.
Yeah, and if everyone gets the same, does it matter? Did you just raise the salary cap equally across all?
It matters in that it creates a bunch of SEC caliber payrolls in the Big Ten that didn't exist before.
That's right. So again, it's more separation of the two conferences that matter, right? Yeah. That's what that's about. Every single trend, I mean, literally every trend in college football, ranging from demography to everything else, favors the Big Ten and the SEC inordinately. So the separation that you see between them and the other leagues is only going to grow. And that's why the Clemsons and the Florida States want to get out of the ACC so badly, even though they get kind of a sweetheart deal with two playoff spots. I mean, if you're Clemson, you're going to the playoffs every year, man, unless you just screw something up badly. You know, don't lose to Wake Forest at home, I guess. All right, next question.
Even then.
What will the offense's most effective personnel grouping be on a down-to-down basis? Assuming Andres gets an approximate Helms production and Washington is at least a league average tight end. I think it's 11 personnel. What do you think?
Yeah. I need to get with Eric because he keeps telling me that I'm dismissing certain tight ends and 12 personnel too much. But the way they've used two tight ends in the past has been to run the ball.
Yep.
And I don't see run the ball personnel at the tight end position anywhere. Well,
so we use two tight ends to run the ball and take deep shots off play action, right? Yeah. We run that fake counter gaps where the tight end is sometimes asked to pick up a defensive end, and it doesn't always work out great. but that is something we will see, partly because Sark likes to dictate coverages. And certain college defensive coordinators are Pavlovian in their response to seeing two tight ends. Yes. And Sark knows he can get that deep post against that coverage if he can sell the play action. So
but all
that is one of the reasons we do it.
In either event, the guy that plays in that is Spencer Shannon, probably. It's not injuries in Washington or injuries and
Winston,
because you're just bringing in the new guy to block, whether it's to take a shot or to run the ball and form it in offense. So maybe Eric knows something I don't, or maybe that dynamic is something I'm right about. At any rate, I think we're going to see way more 11.
Yeah, I think we're an 11 personnel team, and I think Arch's legs allow us to do that. And in fact, I think we're going to be able to run the ball out of 11.
Yeah.
Because of Arch's legs, you're threatening the backside. And, you know, a lot of it, too, depends on if you really scare teams outside, Wingo, Moore, et cetera, you can run out of 11 because you guarantee not just nickel coverage, but you guarantee two deep. And that's the real key to running the ball in college football. It's just a numbers game. Just count up the box, man. All right. That's our best guess is 11. But Eric's making arguments for 12. Next question. If you could click a button and level up one player on offense and defense, who would it be? Ian, I think there's a lot of great candidates here. I shall defer to you.
Ryan Wingo.
Okay.
And if you tell me, hey, actually, Ryan Wingo is already great. He's going to be awesome. I say, double it.
Okay. So he's a 1,300-yard, 15-touchdown receiver.
Crank the dial until he's Jeremiah Smith.
Okay.
There's no end of it. And then defense.
A lot of potential answers here.
I know.
The answer is not Colin Simmons.
No.
We're not trying to take him from 9.5 to 9.8 out of 10.
I want to try to build a elite nickel because that's kind of a question mark. But instead, I think I'm going to adhere to my own philosophy and level up. Maybe Merod Watson.
Whoa!
Just whoever the most promising D tackle is, who's most likely to be maximally disruptive.
Okay.
Make sure that we can get that guy. Sure. Maybe that's Watson. Maybe that's January. I'm not sure.
It could be Alex January, right?
Yeah.
Playing nose.
I don't think it's Terry until a year or two.
AR says Gilboa. I think that's a good answer as well.
Yeah.
There's a number of sort of – we know our core strengths. No one's going to say Anthony Hill. No one's going to say Colin Simmons. Yeah. And Ethan Burke is sort of wasted saying that, right, because we kind of know what he's going to be. I think the question is, where in the secondary do you want a guaranteed level up? And where possibly on the interior defensive line do you want a level up? What about the idea of Derek Williams?
Leveling up from assumed healthy return.
Stud.
Yeah, then you're like, you have Earl Thomas at that point.
That's right.
Or you have Michael Huff or whatever.
Yeah, and now you can put Jelani McDonald in the box at nickel. That's scary.
Here's another one, though, because I know we kind of jokingly dismissed this a minute ago. Colin Simmons is already kind of what you would level up to. But what if we just pushed it another level?
So he's Lawrence Taylor, basically.
What if Colin Simmons was like 4.0 speed, endless motor, knew how to play every position on defense?
Yeah, I think I'm a big guy. I'm a big believer in strength on strength, but I think that may be even getting too greedy. But yeah.
Well, it's definitely too greedy. I'm just wondering if
I'd rather take a guy from a 6 to a 9.
It's like, what if we could put Spider-Man on the team and just change the geometry of the game?
AR says Trey Moore. You know, I think that would actually be – I love Trey and what he can contribute to us. We have a number of types like him, so I think it would be redundant in a sense. Like, you've got Brad Spence, you've got Anthony Hill, Trey Moore. Like, that's all part of the mix of this group of 240 to 250-pound, very athletic, quick guys running around everywhere. I think I would want to strengthen defensive tackle or someone in our secondary. But probably no bad answers on defense. If on offense I couldn't go Ryan Wingo,
yeah,
I might go Brandon Baker at right tackle.
That would help.
That would help. Giving Arch a lot of time, probably a good thing for Texas. All right.
Probably not running back, but if you could just put Bijan on this team.
Yeah.
Turn Trey Wisner into Bijan. I don't know if that's one level.
Or just Christian Clark is just.
Yeah.
He grows like another Achilles tendon.
I think that might happen anyway.
He has two. It always reminds me of the story of Steve Young. He's such a genetic and athletic freak. When he was at BYU, he tore his ACL, but it was a minor tear. And so he's like, I'll play through it. And he did. And at the end of the year, they evaled him for his surgery, and it had healed on its own. Pretty amazing.
What if we all stopped drinking coffee, Paul?
Exactly. See?
What might our bodies achieve?
If you stopped cursing and stopped drinking coffee – a lot of good things will happen to you. Here's a really good thing that'll happen to you. Speaking of leveling up, you need to level up your mortgage game, Ian Boyd, and the rest of you. This is the guy you need to call. You need to call 832-557-1095. That's 832-557-1095. And that number belongs to Mr. Gabe Winslow. He is phenomenal at what he does. There's a lot of different ways you can measure success. Go read his Google reviews. He has 201 Google reviews, all organic. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Sometimes you read Google reviews, it's all lowercase and like says the best, and that's all the person wrote. Maybe not an authentic Google review. Go read his. It's paragraph after paragraph raving about what an incredible job he did for them, got him a great rate, and of course saw them and oversaw the whole process. He's got a law degree. He used to be a lawyer. He is a former National Merit Scholar at Texas. This guy is a stud, and he's a complete cut above the average mortgage guy. Give him a call and find out what leveling up really looks like. 832-557-1095. Next question, producer. I like to call Connor the producer. It shows that he's replaceable. Who are you scouting based on there's going to be some graphics coming up soon that I'm not going to like. Who are you scouting based on next year's hot seats? And I think he's talking about coaching. Yeah. I think there's a lot of potential big jobs that could come open next year, Ian, if things break a certain way. What do you think?
What job is that?
Auburn, Oklahoma.
Oh, a number, you said. I thought you were saying one specific one, and I was like, what's
this? I mean, several. Florida? What if Florida goes 5-7? Yeah. Like, there's a lot of make or break it years, and we're assuming most of these teams will level up and the coach will keep his job. It doesn't always work that way. In fact, it's a coin flip. Some of these guys were expecting to break out, or Auburn finally is going to have its breakout. I wrote about that on Inside Texas. Well, what if they don't? Hugh Freeze is gone. Auburn's a good job. And there'll be a bunch of really good players in the portal. So I think there's several jobs. LSU, do they have the money to pay out Brian Kelly if they bust this year?
No.
No, so he's safe.
I don't think so.
Alabama's safe no matter the result. And I expect DeBoer to do pretty well.
I think Michigan.
Too soon.
Is too soon.
Yeah.
But if they like really botch it with Underwood.
Hey, you might laugh, but this is a pretty good job. Wisconsin could be open.
Wisconsin made a huge investment in what's his name? Cincinnati. Fickell?
Fickell. Ohio yeah. State, former player.
Luke Fickell.
Yeah.
And that has – and then he hired a raid guy to run the air raid in Camp Randall. And so he's in danger.
Yeah, you got to match your system to your local genetics.
Yeah, your climate.
Yes. Also linked to your local genetics. AR says Arkansas. Yes. That is potentially available.
People are already poaching their rosters, though.
Minnesota? No. Flick is Fleck, I should say. Actually, was pretty decent last year, and they're pretty consistently going to a bowl and having a winning season. And
they're pretty content with that.
A
mistake, because he's done as good a job in Minnesota as anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and the job is just not elevating him.
No.
So unless he loves it there, maybe he does, I don't know. He's not elevating himself. And it's just a matter of time before something goes wrong and he gets fired.
You know who could be gone? Gundy.
Oh yeah. The head regent there, Eltief, tried so hard to get Gundy out of there. And Gundy barely fought him off. If they are not good this year, he is done.
We could see both Okie jobs open. Interesting.
What if Oklahoma hired Mike Gundy?
Oh my God, that would be wild. Would never happen, but it'd be amazing. Woodcrest action, interesting question, Ian. Based off of how much Ohio State lost the draft, is there a possibility he does what they did to Michigan? To Ohio State in August. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah, I think there is a possibility. I mean, that was a pretty thorough shellacking. I think it's going to be hard to beat Ohio State that bad. But if Ohio State's like new D-line cannot stop the run and Julian Sain is just throwing off his back foot every other play, that could get ugly, even if the talent is not that far apart, which it won't be.
It's just a matchup thing.
Just the matchup and the timing of the matchup is really bad. So I'll say yes.
Yeah, I think there's – I'd call it an outside possibility. There's a reason Ohio State's favored in this game.
They're favored?
Oh, yeah. In fact, the opening line was Texas plus 4.5, which I really? May or may not have bet on.
That's
crazy, right?
That's a bit much, I think.
Yeah, it is.
That's
all right.
You watch that line when it gets closer to the season and the Vegas starts being more like calibrated. It's hard for me to believe for the start.
As we get closer to it, I think it might be Ohio State minus 2.5, something like that.
Yeah.
All right. Defense last year was the reason for our semifinal run. They allowed 15.31 points per game. Let's go out to that second decimal point.
Why are we doing that?
I think most reasonably expect somewhat of a downturn. How much? Is less than 20 points per game truly feasible? Yes. Not only is it feasible, it's probable.
Yeah. You get less shootouts. Also, Sark is good at avoiding shootouts.
Sark doesn't really want to play in shootouts.
Yeah.
Another thing that runs sort of contrary to you would think his reputation as an offensive mastermind, right? He's content to win a game 31-13. He doesn't care.
Especially, I mean, we'll see if that changes. One thing you have to definitely say about Ewers is that he was good at avoiding game-changing mistakes, usually. But he didn't throw a lot of picks.
He did. Okay. There's other ways to make game-changing mistakes than an interception, like a fumble.
Sure.
But, yes. So, broadly speaking, he took pretty good care of the ball.
It was mostly Sark. Sark knew how to dial up the right plays to – Let's at least guarantee that we can get a first down and punt. At least guarantee that we can run half the quarter's clock out on this drive or whatever. So he was not afraid of comebacks. He knew how to stave them off.
Yeah, so I think something Ian's getting at there is part of your points per game allowed is not just your defense. It's your special teams, and it's also your offense's propensity to put your defense in bad spots. So
I appreciate that you extrapolated that. I was mostly just on a tangent.
Well, that's okay. I'm trying to make something relevant to the question.
I think this just depends on so long as the secondary comes together, then they should be close to as good as last year. And if the secondary is really awesome, they could be better because they're better at some spots.
Yeah, and also I don't see a huge slate of super dynamic offenses on our schedule. Now, Ohio State actually has big upside. Yeah. I'm not sure they're going to realize it first game of the season. I hope they don't.
Right.
Georgia has some upside in that they've significantly upgraded their receiving core in the offseason. But the other teams we're playing, Arkansas, Kentucky, San Jose State, Sam Houston State, those are a bunch of teams you can hold to 7, 10, 13 points. And that's a very good way to effectively pad your per points per game allowed average. You could slip up and allow 27 to somebody, and it's not going to kill you if you're holding other teams to 7, 10, 13 points. Florida will have upside. Yes, it's all on Lagway. If Lagway's shoulder is good to go, I think Florida could be a very threatening team. And I think playing them in Gainesville – I'm telling y'all, circle that right now. That's a scary game for Texas. We better show up for that one.
Speaking of comfortable with playing with not enormous leads, though, Billy Napier stacked 10-win seasons at Louisiana, Lafayette, winning games like 28-17, 24-13, 31-20 every week. So he's like that as well. He's not looking to... He's not looking to see his name in the papers for scoring 50.
That's true. Interesting question from Clayton Hart, I should say. Is there no belief that Terry can have a Simmons-like freshman season? I don't think it's a lack of belief. I think that the closer you are to the ball, the harder it is for you to have a massive impact early. Could he be a guy that in August earns some snaps? Absolutely. But probably a bit more hesitant on predicting that for a guy like Terry. What do you think?
I'm trying to think of defensive tackles in Texas history that have had Simmons-like freshman years.
Not Simmons-like, but we've had a couple. Rod Wright had a good freshman year.
True Byron freshman. Byron Murphy
was rotational. Like he was pretty good.
He would flash as a freshman. It's just not common at the position and period, to your point.
No. So Malcolm Brown was, you could tell as a freshman he was going to be really good, but he was not dominant, but he certainly got snaps. Rod Wright is the guy in recent memory that he was our starter. I mean, he started as a true freshman and he was pretty good.
Most guys have to make an adjustment going from high school guards to college guards in the
So y'all consider that a high school guard is more often than not 5'11", 245.
Yeah.
I mean, and Justice Terry, he was playing small A football in Georgia.
And he played defensive end.
Yes, that's right.
So he's got to adjust inside and to the guys across from him being large, full-grown.
Monster. And athletic. Yeah. But Terry has a good future. Predicting him to be a superstar as a freshman, true freshman, it's tough. Outside an injury to Arch, what are the top three factors that could derail another Final Four season? I've got a few. Ian, what do you got?
Wingo not being really good.
Or wide receiver play being underwhelming altogether?
Yeah. But
specifically how? I would say a lack of separation against elite DBs.
Yeah. I will single out Wingo in particular, but I guess it's possible that somebody else could basically get them where they need to be, a receiver.
Okay, so that's one.
Having zero impact defensive tackles. I don't know if that would derail the season as long as they can hold the point in waves. It's hard to say.
But what about outside at corner?
Yeah. I mean,
were you delighted with what you saw from Manny Muhammad down the stretch last year?
No. Yeah. So like Muhammad and Gilbo are both second corners, and the other team's star receiver is always open.
They convert a lot of third downs.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Or because they're not guys we can trust, we can't get the full benefit of our pass rush because we're never secure enough outside to really let those guys go.
Yep.
So that's number two. What's a third way?
I mean, there's a similar one inside at safety. Like, we know they have good players, but do they have enough coverage ability at safety and nickel?
Yeah, I'm just not very concerned about that.
I'm not saying to be very concerned.
Yeah. I think it'd be more probable O-line.
Yes.
Just not coming together.
Yeah. What does that look like?
We can't find a right tackle that we trust. The interior line doesn't get the push we expected, and in fact, they're inferior as pass protectors.
I think that one could be like, what if this is the year when guys just come running up the middle?
Yeah.
And they can't stop it.
Which we haven't seen in a long time, right?
Yeah. That's evidence we won't see it this year. But
that's right.
They've also had Hayden Connor and Jake Majors that entire time. So.
I'll also offer that Kirby Smart, aside from the freak athletes that he had at Georgia that he decided to unleash on us in both of our games, he also figured out our protections.
Yeah.
And that is something that we've got to look, you can't have a ton of protections in college because it's too complex for college offensive linemen. It's too hard to integrate into your larger offense. But we need to show the ability to tweak that, because Kirby Smart got into Flood's head a little bit in both of those matchups, not just schematically, but in understanding how our protections work and how to attack them. So something to look at. But those could be I think those are the three most probable things that would derail us. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I wonder if that's part of why all of Sark's quarterback takes are suddenly mobile and not statues anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he picks his guy, and I think I would love to see him verbalize what his exact evaluative process is at quarterback, because it's a fairly decent range of body types and athlete types over his career.
Three out of the last four, though, can scoot.
Yeah. But he's had some statues as well.
Yeah, had. That's my point, yeah. Though. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. We shall see. Splendid Addy.
Four out of the last five, actually. Four out of because we have transfer now, and he's mobile.
Was Cody Kessler mobile? Not really.
No.
No, but he was good as a college quarterback.
Yeah, but he didn't have Smart living in his mind on protections back then. You know what I mean? Like, the way teams pressure has gotten so much better, the way they disguise and pressure. So I wonder if Sark is just like, much like the NFL.
He's like, I need an eraser, and that eraser is the quarterback's legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. I mean, I prefer quarterbacks with the athleticism to run or just at least buy time. I think it's hard to construct a college offense around a statue. It's increasingly hard to construct an NFL offense around statues, but there's plenty of statues that have done really well.
You can do it, but what it takes is the Brady, Breeze, Manning mind and skill level that takes. If the answer to any problem is you need like a black belt, it's not an appealing answer.
Yeah. We need some blue belt solutions as well. Yes. Splendid Addy, thank you for joining us as always. Formerly Sugar Daddy, is getting knocked out in the semis again, a successful season. Yes. Yes. Anytime you go to the Final Four in college football, the playoffs, even as bitter as it is to lose, yes, that is a successful season. Let's not get too carried away. What do you think, Ian?
I need more context.
He literally is just asking, is getting to the Final Four again a successful season?
I need to know who we lost to.
We lost to Boise State, Ian.
That's not great.
Broadly speaking, is being one of the last four teams standing, we probably won 12 to 14 games. We probably played for the SEC title or won the SEC title. Is that a successful season? This is not a trick question.
All we had to do last year was beat all the teams.
And then we won the national title.
And beat Clemson at home and Arizona State.
Yeah.
It was good, but it wasn't like that amazing. You know,
he didn't ask you if it's an amazing season. He said, is it a successful season? This question is a surprising struggle for you. I'm not sure
I
understand.
I'm not necessarily thrilled with that.
Okay. Well, I think that's batshit.
You only get those certain years where you have like a window. Are you satisfied? Was 2009 a successful season, Paul?
Yes, it was a successful season. And I was there. I was at the game and I watched Colt get hurt on the stupid play call. But yes, that's a successful season.
I don't blame anyone except Mac Brown. But
I blame you.
But it wasn't like, I'm not going to look back on that and be, if they could get knocked out of the semifinals again, I'll be like, yeah, Texas was a really good team for a long time. But I'm not thrilled with it. Like, you need to win the title at some point.
Yeah, at some point, but that's not an N of one. All right, Ian, we're at an impasse. Read this question.
The data supports head coaches who call plays not winning the Natty. Last coach, last coach, parentheses and only, to do it was Jimbo in 2013. Last year. Sark calling the plays isn't conducive to winning a Natty. Won the Natty calling plays.
Who did?
Ryan Day.
You don't think Kelly called the plays?
He took the call sheet from Chip Kelly in the playoffs.
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Jim Harbaugh, I'm not sure that he wasn't involved at times at Michigan. I think this whole thing is, I've ranted about this a few times. You're not seeing the problems at Texas that you would expect to see from a head coach who's too dialed in on play calling. You'd expect that to mean recruiting is slipping, the defense is rudderless, the culture is rotting, and Texas is all the exact opposite. Their problems have been play calling in the red zone. It's like their biggest issue. So unless that's because Sark is the play caller, which I don't think, can revisit that if they bomb again in the red zone this year. See, Papa says Jim didn't call plays when Michigan won the Natty either. He had a call sheet. He had his cheat guy next to him when he was around, the cheater. What's his, the sign stealer guy?
Yeah, yeah. Connor Stallions.
Connor Stallions. He may not have, maybe the OC did most of the play calling, but Jim Harbaugh at least had all the plays. He wasn't like a passive participant. So I think you have to be very careful with assumptions about who's actually doing what at different schools. And certainly then drawing big conclusions like that.
Was Ryan Day calling plays against Michigan, or was that the impetus for Ryan Day to take over?
I think that was the impetus, was everyone hates me. I'm in big trouble. I need to win big this postseason. We airdropped $20 million from Epstein's secret accounts to build this roster. I'm going to answer to some scary people if I don't win. Kind of deal.
Also, interesting, people don't make the play calling delineation for defensive-minded head coaches, do they?
Yeah.
Like, they don't say, if Kirby Smart calls the defense, Georgia can't win the national title. If Nick Saban calls the defense. And I think if you watched Nick Saban at Alabama in some years, it was not particularly clear that the defensive coordinator was running that defense on game day.
It wasn't always clear the offensive coordinator was running the offense.
Yeah, that's true.
Nick Saban was very involved in everything. You don't have any other thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting. Justin Whale says, "Outs have an elite season from Arch." Oh, we already did that. Never mind. Oh, we've got a super chat for Splenda Daddy.
I think that I think this question is slightly different from earlier. This is not three things that could derail us. These are three things that could win.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Let's just flip them. One of the D tackles is a major disruptor. The interior line is reliable.
Offensive line generally kicks ass.
Yep. And
Wingo's the superstar.
And the secondary is good.
Yeah. And I'd say Wingo's the superstar and DeAndre Moore is a third round NFL draft pick.
And one of the corners is all SEC.
Yeah, that's fair. Sorry, I didn't realize that we'd switch the question around. Final question. What non-Texas games intrigue you the most during non-conference play? Aggies and OU both have interesting games. Any others that you'll have your eye on? And after we answer this, let's make sure we address Splenda Daddy's super chat. What non-Texas games do you have your eyes on?
There's the LSU-Clemson one, right?
LSU at Clemson.
That one is enormous.
Could be super entertaining as well, because both teams will be able to score.
Don't Notre Dame and A&M kick off again?
A&M at Notre Dame.
That one's mostly just interesting and kind of fun. I don't know that the stakes of it are that big.
For Notre Dame, they are.
I don't think Notre Dame is. I was watching CJ Carr in the spring game. I don't think they're going to be in the championship game again this season.
Interesting. Okay.
They're good though. They have maybe next year.
Michigan at OU.
Yeah.
That will be interesting. Not necessarily a super high level of play, but I think pretty good. Main non-cons. I think Clemson, South Carolina, as always, is pretty interesting now that South Carolina is good.
There's a lot of these ACC battles. Notre Dame and Miami.
Yep. Yeah, Notre Dame's got a fun schedule this year, actually. Florida State plays Alabama. That's going to be – I mean, I think DeBoer should just drub Norvell if he can.
I think he will.
Yeah. Can we jump to a Splendid Daddy Super Chat? I don't want to ignore that. Esteemed producer. All right, this is an opportunity to address a perspective. Why don't we recruit a power back for red zone? So I would argue, one, your red zone success is not predicated necessarily on having, quote unquote, a power back. Two, we do have a power back on the roster.
Arch Manning.
Jarrett Gibson. And then three, I think your red zone lack of success tends to be more about your offensive line not getting push, your quarterback not making good decisions in tight spaces, and inopportune turnovers. To me, that's the main factor. So flip this from the Aggie perspective. They all say on a play where literally their entire offensive line got driven 3 yards back by every guy across from them, and the running back got hit 6 yards in the backfield. They all said if we had Le'Veon Moss, he would have scored on that play because he's a power back. And all he would have done is gotten hit for the same loss as the guy that they handed the ball to. So if you don't have the right environment, a power runner doesn't matter. Now, I will say this. If you kind of tie with the defensive line up front, there are running backs who can just push their way into the end zone, whether they either are nifty and they pick a good hole or they just power their way in. And we've all seen that at Texas. We have a tradition of great power backs, Ricky Williams, Earl Campbell. We've seen those guys. What do you think?
Sometimes the speedy backs are good in the red zone because they can cut. Like so much of scoring in the, especially like on the goal line, is jumping over the crowd if you see an opening.
Yep.
Or darting laterally into the one area where you got push.
You know who are two good red zone backs that are not considered power backs?
Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yes, but Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
And sure. Jamal Charles. Jamal Charles was an excellent goal line back.
Yeah.
And that had to do with the fact that when he saw any daylight, he could just materialize there instantly. Bijan, same deal. Roshan, very effective goal line back because of his determination and partly because the first tackler just couldn't get him down. That's also helpful. I don't think adding Cody Johnson to the roster last year would have solved our red zone woes.
It might have saved us against Oklahoma.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Like 2 years ago, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody that can run into a linebacker that's running full speed.
And all forward. And
still get forward.
Yeah.
That was missing.
True.
So it's not like power backs don't help, but you're
– I would actually amend it and just say good running back is very helpful. Yeah. Right? Yeah. All right, well, hey, with that, we went long, and I'm glad we did. That was a lot of fun. We love answering your questions. Thanks to the chat. You guys enriched and made the experience even better. And make sure you like and subscribe to this channel. Make sure you join us at Inside Texas. That's where the best Longhorn conversations are happening. Thanks to all of you. Goodbye, and hook 'em.